A very good morning to everyone. The first case on today's call is number 042055, Al Marbu against the Attorney General. Mr. Bell.
May it please the Court. Good morning. In reviewing Mr. Al Marbu's two cases before you, and I might add Mr. Al Marbu is here, I had the most interesting experience in reviewing many of your recent, that is the Seventh Circuit's, recent decisions in immigration matters that appeared to greatly impact Mr. Al Marbu's cases before you. Your holdings, and I will briefly name the cases, Kersicou, Lopez Chavez, Ben Slimani, and several others, to me, added up to your interest in the issues where there was a particularly meritorious case presented to you. I believe Mr. Al Marbu's is such a very meritorious case for you to consider. One of the cases I did review was the Hadayat case, that where I couldn't help but recall, Judge Ripple, that the court found against Hadayat because he had not filed for a stay of removal. I want to make sure right now I distinguish Mr. Al Marbu's case from Mr. Hadayat's, if I possibly can. That is because Judge Wood granted Mr. Al Marbu a stay of removal on December 30, 2004. Before I come back to that stay issue and the equitable tolling issues that I will call the hot issues, and they really are hot judicially these days, let me point out two overriding, what I think are two overriding categories of issues that maybe you may want to consider before getting to the equitable tolling issues. And by the way, why do I say equitable tolling? Because I think all three of you are well aware that Mr. Al Marbu has an American citizen wife. He's had what is known as an approved I-130, his wife's had an approved I-130 petition for his adjustment to permanent residence, I think 2 years. He's had the 485 pending. He's been married for about 4 years to an American citizen, and they have a natural child and a stepchild. He's asking you to, I'm sure you know, remand this case to the Board of Immigration Appeals to consider reopening. And I said, though, before I get to that issue of whether or not he's in status where you can cause that to occur, let me point out quickly these two overriding issues that I have brought to your attention very recently. One is, to be very, very brief, I believe it's Judge Bauer that dealt with it. I can never pronounce the name. Provence Kalaikacha is the Thai lady.
Huh? Close enough.
Close enough. I prefer to call her by the first name, Vacheri, if you'll permit me. There's lots of similarity in this 2006 Vacheri case with Mr. Al Marbu's in the sense that they're both, I think you'll find, quite meritorious. And you went out of your way, if I may say so, to permit asylum to be granted, ultimately, to Vacheri, because she helped break a major drug ring in Thailand. Well, I can only imagine that I know all of you have distinguished judicial careers, and in your lengthy careers, I'll bet you've never seen what is in our brief, Mr. Almarbu's separate appendix number 2. It's the letter from the chief of the Special Service of Kansas, Secret Service, excuse me, of Kansas City, to the Board of Immigration Appeals, detailing how Mr. Almarbu broke a major counterfeiting ring in Kansas City, wore a wire, risked death, that type of stuff. And but the drug agent in Venturi simply wrote a letter of support. The chief in Kansas City wrote to the Board of Immigration Appeals. That's what I'll almost bet you've never seen in your entire career. It's kind of a backdrop that I suggest you'll find quite meritorious when you consider Mr. Almarbu's situation. Now, the other backdrop, the overriding issues, I hope you got my supplemental, that's what it was, supplemental filing yesterday. I know what it means not to do that yesterday, literally yesterday. But in our reply brief at appendix number 5, I mentioned I might be doing this because there was cases that have just been decided in the past couple weeks. Let me call to your attention what respondent brought to your attention in her, and I respect it, her brief, the Bando-Ortiz case. And to be very, very brief, it's worth your considering, especially in light of what Judge Wood wrote in Lopez-Chavez case. To make a long story short, Bando-Ortiz, I submitted to you the actual petition for writ of certiorari. It's in your supplemental appendix yesterday that the court accepted yesterday. And I have copies I could give it to you today if you need it today. To make a long story short, very, very importantly, if I may stress it, amazingly, contrary to the Fifth Circuit, there was a strong dissent in Bando-Ortiz. Judge Smith and the chief judge in the Fifth Circuit all were in the dissent, major dissent. And to make a long story short, I'm doing this by heart right now. I think it's December 19, 2006. A joint motion to reopen was approved by the BIA, reopening Mr. Bando-Ortiz's case. Now, a very important distinction is Bando-Ortiz had no visa to enter the United States. Mr. Almarbu had a proper visa. There's a huge question, I mean that, whether or not he was an overstay. Huge question. He tried to demonstrate that he was in status. The judge cut him off, and you know there's a defective transcript issue here. I'm sure you know that. And to make a long story short, I hope on the continuance issue you will look at the Subhan case that this court decided about 2 years ago. Judge Posner, where the man was looking for a fourth continuance. He had 3 previous continuances. And Judge Posner's decision said he's entitled to the fourth. That's just what it comes down to. Mr. Almarbu was trying to get a second continuance, that's all, to prove up his, through a FOIA request, that he was in status. Well, the defective transcript shows in a nutshell, he was trying, but the judge cut him off and gives no reason, just like in Subhan. I'm sure you're very familiar with the cases. Gives no reason for denying the continuance. Really, no reason. Just says you can appeal it and bring it back to me. That was the reason, if you want to say you can appeal it. Well, to make a long story short, there's a Salas-Ortiz case here. There's several defective transcript cases here in this court. And to make a long story short, when the applicant was denied, it was because he did not file an affidavit, did not demonstrate prejudice. There's 3 affidavits. He's filed several affidavits trying to demonstrate prejudice. And I hope you'll bear in mind the Kersicou case. I think you're very familiar. That's a bellwether case in this district. Okay. Adrian Kersicou, I can see him in my mind. Where whole chunks of testimony were cut out by the judge. And I take that to come under the defective transcript issue, where whole chunks of testimony were deleted. Let me just come, my white button is on. As part of rebuttal, I'll discuss these couple of other overriding issues. They involve Padilla. I hope that's in the reply brief, and Diaz-Ruacho. These are important cases. The essence of those cases are that they strongly favor everything I've submitted to you in our briefs. And I'll be back for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Any questions, gentlemen?
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Bell. We'll hear now from Ms. Federici. Federici, I'm sorry.
That's correct. You were correct the first time. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Carol Federici. I'm representing respondent Alberto Gonzalez in this matter. And if you excuse me, I have a very bad cold, so I apologize for the croaking.
Just don't come any closer.
Okay, yeah, that's right. You know, not to breathe too heavily. These two consolidated cases are the latest chapter in Mr. Al-Marbu's continuing saga to remain in the United States to pursue illegally while he attempts to pursue adjustment of status based on two successive marriages. In the first case, Mr. Al-Marbu challenges the immigration's denial of a continuance in 2002. Mr. Al-Marbu showed up at his second removal hearing before the judge, said he just recently divorced his first wife, who was the basis for the first continuance, and just 12 days before had married his second wife. In these circumstances, the immigration judge reasonably denied him a further continuance.
Did the immigration judge say that was the reason he was doing it?
The immigration judge said that he was going to have a heavy burden to show that his second marriage was bona fide in order to get the visa petition approved, and that in these circumstances, and given that he hadn't provided any...
Now we know that burden has been met.
It has now, but at the time he did not present any evidence to show that the marriage was bona fide other than the fact of the marriage, and his wife, I guess, was present at the hearing.
He gets to the... difficulty, I, in a global sense, that we have with the case, and that is you seem to be representing a party speaking out of both sides of its mouth. On the one hand, they want to send Mr. Al-Marbu back to Jordan, and on the other hand, they've approved a change in status for him because he's married to an American citizen in a bona fide marriage. It's been a long saga, it has. But the government seems to be spending an awful lot of time, money, energy to reach a conflicting result here.
I don't believe it's a conflicting result. It's often the case, as Your Honors are probably aware, that while an alien is in removal proceedings, that he does have a parallel proceeding undergoing with USCIS to get some form of different status here in the U.S. And that's just the way Congress has set up the structure. It does allow an alien to pursue those two avenues in parallel. But
So you really think that Congress intended this result, and that the United States government would say, yes, you have a bona fide marriage to an American citizen, you can stay on that basis, and at the same time say, sorry, you got to leave?
No, I think what Congress intended was that individuals are not allowed to remain illegally in the United States while they pursue adjustment of status. Mr. Al-Marbu agreed to voluntarily depart back in 2002, and that order was affirmed by the board in 2004 with a 30-day voluntary departure order, and he still hasn't left the country. So he has violated the law, and it's not Congress's intent that those people, you know, be allowed to stay in the U.S. while the adjustment is going on. The visa petition process, they don't look at the alien status in the United States. They just look at whether the marriage is a valid marriage or not. Then the next step is the adjustment of status, and that is when they would look at the alien status in the U.S. and determine that he's not eligible. But you had a question.
Yes, maybe you could help me with a factual matter, if you would. We have now held that it is necessary to get a stay of a voluntary departure order separate from a stay of the removal order.
Yes.
When did that decision come down, before or after the situation was really important to this particular individual. Didn't that, it seemed to me that decision had come down after the time when we would have really expected Mr. Al-Marbu to have moved for the voluntary departure.
If I can just pull the decision from my stack here.
Sure.
Your Honor is correct. The decision was issued in December of 2004, and the board's affirmance of the voluntary departure order was in March of 2004.
So at the time, he did not move separately for the voluntary departure. For a stay of the voluntary departure, there was case law in several other circuits that supported the view that he didn't have to. Am I correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. But his position is no different than the position of the alien in Alimi, that case where the court did say that he needed to have moved, specifically sought voluntary departure, and he didn't. So I don't see that he, even though his case was being sort of going through the board at the same time, I don't see that he should get different treatment than Mr. Alimi got. I also want to point out that he did seek a stay of his voluntary departure order or an extension from the district director, and that was denied. And he did not seek any further review at that point or bring up that issue when he did file his petition for rehearing in April of 2000. I mean, his petition for review in April of 2004 before this court. He never mentioned or sought an extension of voluntary departure from this court. I also want to point out that the court did, the petition was filed in April of 2004. The court did not issue a temporary stay until May of 2004. Then it lifted that temporary stay in October of 2004 and reinstated it as a permanent stay, you know, pending the litigation in December of 2004. So even if you're going to hold that the court stay affected his voluntary departure order, there was enough period of time when the stay was not in effect where the voluntary departure order would have been running and it would have run out. So he, no matter how you view it, he would have overstayed his voluntary departure order. And that does bar him from adjustment of status for a period of 10 years. So he is not eligible now for adjustment of status. But I want to point out the motion to reopen, which is the subject of the second case here, that the board denied his motion to reopen once he got his visa petition, once his wife's second visa petition was approved, and she got U.S. citizenship, then he filed a motion to reopen. But that motion to reopen was untimely, and that was the first basis for the board's denial of the motion. And that's a separate independent basis, so the court does not need to reach the issue of whether he's even eligible for adjustment of status because he failed to voluntarily depart. The board denied the motion first on the ground that it was untimely, and that's clear in the record. The fact that it took the agency a year to process both her citizenship application and his I-130 is not a basis for tolling of the motion to reopen deadline. Equitable tolling applies when there was some misconduct or misleading on the part of the government, and that's not true in this case. This was just processed normally. There's no evidence that it was inordinately delayed or anything. It's just that's the normal processing time. Basically, aliens are not allowed, and this court has stated they're not allowed to remain illegally in the United States pending adjustment of application or pending the approval of their visa petitions. His proper remedy at that point would have been to leave the country and to continue to pursue it from outside the country, and he would have been able to, assuming the marriage was bona fide, he would have been able to come back as a lawful permanent resident. But the statute does not provide or allow for them to remain illegally in the United States.
May I shift your attention a bit and ask you about the underlying order of removal. When the immigration judge issued the underlying order of removal, he seemed to be quite aware of, in matter of author, but he did not seem to be aware of the subsequent decision of the board, which did change the standard, the Velarde case. Didn't the immigration judge then rule really on a misapprehension of the applicable standard?
The judge did not recognize that a Velarde had been issued. But as I explained in the brief, that was a harmless error because the judge did go on to say he was denying it on the basis that there was no evidence that the marriage was bona fide. And that is one of the requirements for a Velarde grant of a motion to reopen or continuance in this case, is that there has to be proof that the marriage is bona fide. In this case, he didn't submit any proof other than just the fact of him being married. What the judges look for in that situation is evidence that they are living together, that they've combined their finances, that there was some period of courtship. So there's documents, rental agreements, or bank statements that they usually look for, as well as affidavits from the couple and from individuals that know the couple attesting to that there was a courtship and a true marriage. So none of that was presented.
Assuming, arguendo, mm-hmm. that we disagree with you with respect to whether or not the immigration judge fulfilled the standard, the Velarde standard, as well as the Author standard. If he simply looked at the Author standard, wouldn't that vitiate the underlying removal order?
Well, I want to also point out that the board first affirmed the IJ's decision without opinion, but then in addressing a subsequent motion to reconsider that Mr. Al-Marbu filed, the board did address the Velarde standard and talk about Velarde. So I believe that cured any error or any gap in the IJ's reasoning. The board actually did specifically consider Velarde and held that it didn't. He didn't satisfy the Velarde standards here. So that does cure the immigration judge's the gap in his reasoning in this case.
Has anything ever been found to support the statement that he tried to adjust his status early on before he overstayed his visa? He made a Freedom of Information Act request.
Right. He's argued that he had actually applied to change his status from non-immigrant visitor to a student,
right.
And there's been no evidence. He's presented none even at this stage, and as you know, they keep filing things, and still he's come forward with no evidence that he ever filed such an application.
The government has, I assume, looked and have no record of anything like that.
There was nothing in his file, his A file, that's what they call it about that.
Is that where it would be?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, and I don't know.
I don't have any idea where it would be if you did that kind of request.
Yeah, I don't. That's something we could look into further, or you could ask petitioner if they did get a response to the FOIA request. That would be the most obvious place to look right now. But in any event, even if he had applied, just an application does not extend your status until it's been granted. And he admitted that as soon as he got married to his first wife, he stopped going to school or he abandoned his plans to be a student. So at that point, his application would have no longer been approvable. And even if it had been approved, it would have been, once he abandons his status as a student, he abandons his ability to be here on that sort of visa. So it's sort of a red herring in that respect. And again, he didn't come forward with any evidence to the immigration judge to show that he was lawfully in the U.S. and still has not presented any evidence. So the immigration judge at the time, based on the record before him, properly concluded that he was removable as a visa overstay.
Going back to your question about the, or by question, your response with respect to the author Velarde problem, given the Gayo case, this court, can we look to the ruling on the motion to reconsideration in order to determine the basis of decision?
The Gayo case. I'm sorry. Gao.
Gao, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Gao.
Yeah. So, I believe that. in reconsidering the, even though that decision is not, was not on review here before the board, before the court, the board's issuance or reasoning on reconsideration does shed light on its decision, its original decision, and so I believe it, you can look at it to determine whether the board did cure the immigration judge's error. But in any event, I, as I said before, I don't believe there was an error in that the immigration judge did apply the correct standard in looking at whether a motion for a continuance was appropriate. Even though he didn't cite the proper case, he did look at whether there was evidence of a bona fide marriage, and there wasn't. And he, so on that basis, and that comports with Velarde, even though he didn't specifically cite Velarde, he denied the motion to reopen.
You agree that the second marriage is bona fide, no?
Again, I there's not sufficient evidence. He has, still hasn't. I haven't seen the specific evidence that the agency would need to look at to determine that, and that would be a matter.
Well, they have a child.
Yeah, I mean, it seems from what they've said that they're still married after 4 years and they have a child, and the I-130 was granted. So it's a different situation now. But at the time the IJ looked at it, it was, he'd only been married 12 days. And there was no evidence.
The first marriage was pretty fishy.
Well, again, she had withdrawn. She had filed a visa petition and then withdrawn it, so that already looks suspicious. And so that, all that information was before the immigration judge, too, that colored his view of the second marriage that looked kind of rushed and, you know, just for the purposes of the hearing. So anyway, if my time's up, so if there are no further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you, counsel. How much time does counsel have? I'm going to make that 5 minutes, sir, since we gave the government a minute longer.
Appreciate it very much. May it please the court. There was beaucoup evidence before Judge Brauhaus of a bona fide marriage at the hearing, at the November hearing, and that was because the government trial attorney in the record told Judge Brauhaus she had the copy of the filed I-130 petition.
Wait. Just to get the chronology here, he marries the first woman, this Brenda.
I believe they were married maybe close to a year and a half or two. It was not a short marriage. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, but then she files this request on his behalf, then withdraws it.
And she later reinstated it.
Well,
yes, go ahead.
She allegedly tried to withdraw her withdrawal, and then they get divorced, and then within weeks he marries the present wife, and that's 12 days before his hearing.
Yes.
Now, looking, you know, without hindsight here, I mean, hindsight's great. I made a lot of money if I knew Florida was going to beat Ohio State last night. But when you look at it as the immigration judge looks at it in 02, doesn't a reasonable person say, boy, this looks like a fishy marriage on top of a fishy marriage?
Well, of course, we can all understand that. But he simply asked for a continuance to the charge against him was being an overstay. And he asked for a routine continuance to obtain his file to show where he had applied to request a change of status to that of student. Now, it so happens, once again, that his and that continuous request was denied, though there's, again, there's many indiscernible references in the transcript, a very defective transcript with respect to his efforts to obtain a continuance. And according to Subhan, I think the judge should have routinely granted him the continuance to further bolster his defense. But in any event, his pregnant wife was present in court, and the trial attorney brought that wife's appearance and the I-130 petition to the attention of the judge. And so under the standard of Subhan and I think Ben Slimani and several other Seventh Circuit courses, I just, with an I-130 pending, and you're exactly right on matter of Velarde, Pacheco that the judge should, they should have continued it under those circumstances. Let me just say there is a 485 petition that's for permanent residence. It has endless documentation of the bona fides of the marriage. That was filed on April 24, 2004, and it's mentioned at page 13 of our original brief. I just, there's endless. In any event, the he was here legally. Mr. Albarbu was here properly. His deadline, if you will, to leave was equitably told, according to this court, in Miller versus Runyon. And both sides have cited that case. It's 77 Federal 3rd, 189, 1996, at page 191. And I'm just reading from the headnote. If the party cannot meet his burden, his time burden, due to an irremediable lack of information or other circumstances beyond his control, so he cannot reasonably be expected to sue in time, then his time limitation, to quote Judge Posner, is equitably told. He was here on time, according to that, and the Rife, by the way, the Rife case says, that's the Eighth Circuit case, which was figured in the, I believe, in the Band-Ortiz case, makes it clear that filing to the stay of removal, the judge would grant it, Mr. Almarbu, automatically includes a stay of voluntary departure. Now, the thrust of the three new cases I sent you, Padilla, Band-Ortiz, and Diaz-Ruacho, is to the effect that there's several overriding issues here. Even ahead of equitable tolling, that should make it possible for you to remand this case summarily, frankly, or suspend action on this case until these cases are thrashed out in all the courts. Any further? Thank you for your attention, gentlemen, on behalf of Mr. and Mrs. Almarbu. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
My time is up. I know that. I thank you very much for your consideration. Thank you, and your attention.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel for their presentations today, and the case will be taken under advisement.